Back again to the Bad Quaker Podcast, where liberty is our mission. Today is Tuesday, April 30th, 2013, and this is podcast number 308. In a minute, I'm going to play for you the interview I had. I talked to Chase Rachels on Skype yesterday evening, and in just a minute, I'm going to play that for you. It's a nice little interview. It's only about 20 minutes long, and Chase and I just had a really nice little conversation. Before I get to that, though, I want to get some stuff out of the way. I've been giving little free advertisements to things like Porkfest and stuff like that, and I want to let you know, if you have some kind of an upcoming event and you'd like it announced on the podcast, drop a note to badquaker@badquaker.com. And let us know about the event, and we'd be happy to give you some free advertising at this spot right here in the podcast. So, just like Porkfest, right now, we're talking about Porkfest 10. It's happening June 17th through 23rd at the Rogers Campground in Lancaster, New Hampshire. Be sure and get there if at all possible. It's going to be a lot of fun. I was up there last year. We plan to be there this year. I'll be speaking two different days, but more important than that, there's a lot of speakers there. There's all kinds of activity going on every single day. There's if you just, you know, do a Google search on Porkfest X and Porkfest, and then the letter X, and you're going to be surprised at how much is going on there. It's, in my opinion, Porkfest is the Liberty event of the year. I mean, just hands down. If you're only going to go to one thing this year, go to Porkfest, and I really mean that. Now, also, the first annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, hosted by the Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition, is going to be at Brighton Recreation Area in Brighton, Michigan. This is basically a long weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, August 17th, 18th, and 19th. It is not going to be like Porkfest. It's not every minute is filled with stuff going on. This is going to be a fun, friendly, a family affair. It's going to be, you know, camping and just getting together and maybe eating hot dogs around a campfire and talking, maybe play some music, and just it's just a sort of a fellowship time to get together and let people meet each other and just kind of bump elbows. And again, that's going to be August 17th, 18th, and 19th at the Brighton Recreation Area in Brighton, Michigan. I'll put a link in today's show notes where you can sign up for that. And again, I want to mention that we have a list of the top 50 Bad Quaker podcasts. Those are now on BitTorrent. If you want to read the list, I'll put the link in today's show notes again for the BitTorrent location. And then if you want to read the list, I'll put the link in today's show notes for the forum where the list is located. And if you want to, you can just pick out one individual file there. Now, after I get back from, I'm gonna break away here and play the recording of Chase Rachels and I talking. And after I get done with that, then I'll have some thoughts at the end. Like I said, the interview with Chase is only about 20 minutes or so. So I'll have a couple things I want to cover when I get back, including two different articles that you should probably take a look at that are pretty good. Okay, stick with me, and here's my interview with Chase Rachels. Okay, with me on the podcast today is Chase Rachels, and I've asked him to come on the podcast to talk about a very important project that he's involved with, and it's called the Blue Ridge Liberty Project, right?
That's correct.
Chase, welcome to BadQuaker.com podcast, and it's good to see your face and good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's good to be here, Ben. I really appreciate you having me on here. This is definitely a very exciting project to be a part of. Justin Stout and I founded it about 9 months ago or so, and we've really seen a lot of interest and really the exposure and the success and the people moving here has been really steadily growing at an increasing rate. So it's really a neat thing to be a part of, and I'm looking forward to see where it's going to in the future.
Now you're in, was it North Carolina, right?
That's right. We're in Asheville, North Carolina, and that's Western North Carolina. Unlike the rest of the state, it's kind of like a little progressive haven, if you will. People here are pretty free thinking, open to peaceful ideas and thinking outside the box. The culture here is so different from the rest of North Carolina. They call it the Paris of the South and the East Coast San Francisco. So you get a good mix of elements from very conservative types in the outlying country areas and the more progressive, liberal-minded types in the city. So it kind of makes for a great concoction to talk about libertarian ideals.
Now, the purpose of the Blue Ridge Liberty Project is to make a place where people can get together and not necessarily seek a political change, but I can't remember exactly how it is the website states it. Maybe you could say
it
better.
Talk about that. Basically, we don't appeal to the state for our liberties. We appeal directly to the people. Now, when we say we don't go through political channels, that's not to say that our activity won't affect the political atmosphere, because you know, if once we start to enlighten more people on these ideas of private property, free markets, non-aggression, peaceful parenting, etc., then their politicians are gonna end up following suit because they have to appease their constituents to get into office. So I think it will have eventually some sort of indirect political effect. It's just we don't think that time and resources spent on the political game are the most optimally spent. I think it's a lot more optimally spent on the people themselves.
So it's not at all your goal then to, you know, get a, let's say, a libertarian congressman or something like that. You're not trying to take over the mayorship of Asheville or anything along that lines. You're really not going in that direction with this.
No, not at all. In fact, we're very explicit that we'll never endorse a candidate or a piece of legislation or a political party. We'll definitely endorse repealing certain legislation and any sort of cuts in taxes and spending and whatnot, but we're never going to actually endorse a positive political action. So That's certainly up there. And we're not just here to live free. That's definitely a big part is to come here and live free with other people and to have a community of free thinkers and peaceful parenters and just single voluntarists, if that's the case, which is great. We want to support the agorist side of the house as well. Agorism is a huge part of our project, and we want to educate people. We want to do outreach, education. Pretty much the only form of activism we're really refraining from taking is like we just discussed, the political thing, as well as the more antagonistic, in-your-face activism. Like, we're not going to be smoking joints in the faces of cops or whatever, but we want to make ourselves kind of like an integral part of the community, helping do community service, teaching classes, educating, conducting black market and gray market activity through agorism, because there's already a lot of agorism here as it is. People just don't know it by that name. So you really want to help kind of develop that facet of this area, and those are pretty much the primary means by which you want to kind of achieve the goal of living in a more free way.
Asheville is very close to the western border of North Carolina, where it comes in contact with Tennessee, mm-hmm. and that's a very rough mountainous area of the Appalachians, and the Appalachian people have a tendency to lean towards those concepts of agorism and everything and voluntarism. They tend by nature to go in that direction. But Asheville is not necessarily Appalachian in that sense. It's a nice sized city. We're not talking about the stereotype that especially East Coast newspapers in the past would think of people either from North Carolina or from Appalachia as appearing. But I think that's really good that that you're specifically going in that direction, because, you know, it's really easy to have this, you know, to have this picture frame, and everything that that is acceptable in this greater movement that we're doing is within that picture frame. And if somebody says, well, you know, I don't want to do that, well, it's too bad. It's in the picture frame. You have to accept this as part of what we're doing. But I think to have a bigger vision, you know, I've stopped using the phrase liberty movement, because that sounds like it's trendy and it's like it's going to wear out in a little while. And, you know, and I've started to use the phrase that liberty is our mission, because it's like we've set our minds to this and we're focusing on it. We have a goal. We have a way to get there. We understand the principles that are driving us. And this is not going to be a fad that's going to fall away in 2 or 3 years. And it's not based on, you know, one guy, Ron Paul or whoever. It's not based on that. So it's a more focused mission. It's not, you know, it's like it, maybe some people might say it's a Mission Impossible, but I don't think it is. And in something like that, each of us has a different way of thinking of it and a different way of doing it. Mm-hmm. So what you're doing is not exactly like what somebody else is doing, and it doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, like you said, it's we're promoting an idea or a philosophy, and an idea or a philosophy is timeless. And really, our measure of success is really just based upon how the degree to which we are living free as it is. I mean, whatever the laws say is kind of irrelevant. What really matters is how free are we actually living. You know, so the more people that move here, I feel like that's another success every day. Every day that I live here and I'm able to do things outside the confines or outside the awareness of the state, and that's not hurting anyone else, I think that's another day of success for me. And every day I try to promote the message of liberty to other people locally and online. So really, people are always like, well, you're never going to be able to actually live free and all this stuff. And maybe we won't get there completely to a voluntarist society, but we can certainly live very free to a very high degree now. And it's markedly easier to do so once you have a support network and a community of like-minded individuals who share the same virtues of non-aggression and free markets and private property. Now, this is not to say that we're all two-dimensional. We're not just kind of xenophobic in the fact that we want to turn away anyone who has different interests or personality types. In fact, it's the contrary, I believe. We're all very radical individuals, and there's a huge spectrum of personality traits and types and demographics and interests within our project as it is now. For instance, we're probably at least the third female, which is very strange for a libertarian organization.
Yeah.
Even occupations range anywhere from survivalists, naturalists, paramedics to like software engineers and film editors and whatnot. So we got a wide spectrum of talents and interests and personalities, which is all kind of united based on our love for liberty and peace. So it's really a really cool thing to be a part of.
Now, do you have any kind of sign-up thing where a person commits to moving in the future, or are you just saying, here we are, come and join us?
Well, yeah, I mean, because I don't really understand the whole concept of having to be signed. I don't want someone to feel any sort of extra obligation or pressure. I want someone to move here because they genuinely want to move here. And if they're going to move here because they want to, they don't need to sign anything. So it's, yeah, just as you said, we're just making ourselves available, making sure people who express interest in moving here are helped out in any way, whether it's giving advice or helping them crash in a place for a few days while they're getting on their feet or finding a job or another place to stay. So yeah, it's a very laissez-faire type of ordeal we have here. Just come as you will. If you want to leave, fine. If you want to come, that's great. We'll help you out. No obligations, no expectations, no pressure. And we're hoping that they'll just like living here so much that they won't want to move away, that they'll want to instead actually attract others to here as well.
Tell me about the weather in Asheville. I know for a lot of people, when you say, you know, North Carolina, or you say something about the South, they immediately think of really, really hot and sweaty and, you know, maybe even hurricanes and that kind of thing. You're not really in the track. There'd have to be an awful, unusual hurricane to make it all the way into Asheville.
We're quite a ways away from the coastline. I think like 5 hours or so, and we're in the Appalachian Mountains, so it's a little bit cooler than the rest of the South. So it's you get all four seasons here. They're pretty mild. It does get a little bit hot in the summer and a little cold in the winter, but it's not nearly as cold as, you know, New Hampshire, or not nearly as hot as Florida. And the growing season here is fantastic. I've been to a lot of places. I grew up in a military household. I joined the military after high school myself. So I've moved around the world and the country. And I don't think I've ever been to another place that was as fertile and as lush as Asheville is. It's quite amazing. It's really easy to grow food and help kind of work on the self-reliance skills if you want to. We're really big into that as well, the homesteading and growing your own food and becoming more and more self-reliant, less dependent upon this state infrastructure or even this distorted economy. It's just a great area for so many ways, culturally, geographically, just what you can do here as far as becoming self-sufficient. So, yeah.
How much of the focus is in the actual city of Asheville, and how much is bleeding more out into the country?
Well, we certainly reach out anywhere we can. I mean, most of our members, actually about half of our members probably live in the country, about half live in the city. But most of our activities and events are in the more densely populated areas, so we can maximize our exposure, right? So we're doing most of them in the downtown areas and in the more populous areas. We're actually planning on maybe doing some sort of camping event in the near future, which would be out in the country. So there's really people in the country, the mountain folk and the hippies and the bohemians and, you know, whoever else in the cities, the yuppies or whatever. I mean, just this movement, this idea, this philosophy just attracts such a wide range of personalities and peoples that's, you know, we really don't even need to kind of manipulate our message according to the audience. It's popular everywhere. So
how many people do you think you have so far?
At this point that are currently living here, we have approximately 20 or so. We have at least a dozen or so more who are moving in the near future, and many more who are looking to move within the next year or two. So the interest is definitely growing every day. I mean, I think I go by every day, every other day or so, and I look at someone else posting on the Blue Ridge Liberty Project Facebook page saying, hey, I'm looking to move here. Any way you guys can help me out or any resources that I can have? So yeah, the interest is certainly growing, you know, and I just think that in reference to the Free State Project, I think that we're going to be like friendly competition. At least that's how I see us. I think that we can be very symbiotic in our relationship, but I think we can also have some healthy competition. I look at it as more sort of like interdepartmental competition. We're all working towards the same goal, but we have different departments and different ways of doing it and methodologies. So I think people have been for a long time longing for an alternative to the Free State Project, whether it's the area they don't like or they just don't like the way the organization is run. So I think I feel very happy to have the opportunity to kind of fulfill that niche market.
That kind of growth and that kind of time frame from a startup, that's pretty good, actually. That's quite impressive. Here's one thought, too. You know, my wife and I have talked about moving to New Hampshire, and one of the real holdbacks is the winters, the New Hampshire winters. And then the counter argument is, well, we live in Ohio now, and the winters in Ohio are almost as bad, not the quantity of snow, but actually colder than a good portion of New Hampshire. So, you know, how is that any different? Well, we're doing everything we can to get out of Ohio and move south where it's warmer. So one possible option that's bouncing around in my head is, you know, New Hampshire in the summer is awful nice, and Asheville in the winter is not bad at all, you know, especially compared to Ohio or New Hampshire. So that's just something we've been thinking about, that, you know, since we have the motorhome, to be in, you know, a seasonal like that and move between the two areas, maybe not necessarily right in Asheville. We've gone down into southern Alabama, and the first time I ever saw southern Alabama, and I was blown away by that place. That is just, wow, that is unbelievable. But but Asheville's definitely on the road between the two, so that's always going to be a thought.
Well, we hope you guys can visit. And you made a remark about us growing so quickly in such a short amount of time. And I think a lot of that is due to two factors. Well, a few factors, really. Just our mission is quite a bit different than the free states. It's a little more focused. Also, just Asheville kind of sells itself. You know, even if there wasn't a project here, it's a great place to live for families. It's just beautiful here. But the main thing is that we probably have access to the largest privately owned libertarian social media network, as well as probably the single largest privately owned homesteading social media network as well. So it really helps us expose a lot of people across the web and across the world to what we're doing here. So that's one of the key advantages that we have.
Now, got a little bit of echo there, but what's the economic situation like in Asheville? Is it there are a lot of jobs there? Is it struggling?
Well, on paper, it's not the best because on paper it doesn't really account for all the gray and black market activity, right? It's hard to kind of tabulate the agorist activity that's going on there. But really, about to give you kind of an idea of the economy here, about a third of the people here at least get some part of their income from entrepreneurial endeavors, from their own businesses. So entrepreneurship is ripe out here. People are always selling their wares or their services on the streets somehow, and there's a lot of people interested in that kind of homemade stuff and local business type of items. Food here is a really big deal. Lots of farmers markets. So really the job market, isn't fantastic, but it's not really fantastic in most places. But, you know, it's definitely not terrible. I mean, I think anyone can pretty much get a job in any sort of unskilled labor position within a couple weeks. You know, so the jobs are out there, right? It's pretty good economy, especially when you factor in the agorist activity.
That's good to hear. Mm-hmm. So you got everything going for you. You've got, you know, a good seasonal environment to deal with. You've got a decent economic environment to deal with. Mm-hmm. It's far enough away from the coast that you don't have to worry about hurricanes, and you're not in an earthquake zone, and you're not stuck in the plains of Wyoming. We should take on the Wyoming Free State Project while we're at it. We wish them well up there in Wyoming, but it's a totally different thing that you're creating down there in Asheville.
Oh, yeah, and we like the area so much because it's really supposed to be like a 30-mile radius around Asheville. And so that covers places that are way out in the country. If you want to be kind of on your own, isolated from society, having your own homestead out somewhere in the middle of the forest, you can certainly do that within 30 miles of Nashville in places like Madison County or Burnsville or Leicester or Marshall. And then if you want something more metropolitan, you want to live somewhere where there's lots of art and culture and great food, you can live closer to the city and anything in between. So we like it because it really does cater to a lot of different demographics and interests and lifestyles. So you're right. It does. It's kind of the perfect place, and that's why we chose it. We didn't just form a project where we lived. We looked around all throughout the Southeast and picked this place specifically for these reasons.
So now they can folks can find out about the Blue Ridge Liberty Project by going to Blue Ridge Liberty Project on Facebook. Where else are you guys located?
They can also find us at brlp.org or blueridgelibertyproject.com. And I want to talk about one last thing, Ben, is the peaceful parenting thing. Now, I don't want people to get the impression that we're only looking for families. That's not the case at all. There's plenty of single volunteerists part of the project, and they're very welcome here, and there's place for them. However, we like to also emphasize peaceful parenting because we feel like raising our kids through a non-authoritarian manner with peace and reason and teaching them to negotiate and not just blindly submit really breaks the cycle which they're in right now, which allows them to accept the state so readily. You know, so we feel like peaceful parenting is probably in the long term one of the most effective means to eventually vanquishing the state altogether.
Right? I think that's really important. I think it's something that, you know, some people have put a pretty good amount of emphasis on it. But I don't think all of us together have come anywhere near close enough at focusing on how important that is. Because, you know, I've said this before in regards to the state. If something were to happen, Murray Rothbard used to talk about a magic button that you could push and make the state just vanish. Mm-hmm. But I've said that, with all due respect to Murray Rothbard, that's silly. The state exists today because there's a market for the state. People want the state. They want that aggression. They want that fist over them. They feel comforted by it. And what we have to do is we have to offer a market alternative to that. And how can we do that if we're raising our children to be in the market for more state? So, you know, I think all of us together, and I'm guilty of this, we need to put more and more emphasis on that topic. Because if, well, I shouldn't say if, when the time comes that the market for liberty is greater than the market for the oppression of government, when that day comes, we need to have a generation in place that can readily not only teach that, but accept it as well. And so I've said this before, if the state could go away for one generation, a full generation being raised without government would never want it again. They would look back on it like, that's so weird that people used to do that.
Oh,
but we absolutely have to have that generation in place in order for that to take place.
I agree. It's the state is an obsolete institution by all means, not only unethical, but obsolete in the utilitarian sense as well. And I think that'll be very easy to sell liberty to these children, not just because, you know, it's cooler or whatever, but because we're not just teaching being free feels better. It's truth. It's justice. The state is a contradiction. It's the opposite of truth. It's doublespeak and doublethink. And the only reason people are able to long for it now is because they have to be constantly inculcated and propagandize these ideas from their public indoctrination camps, going to public schools for 12 years, and then they go off into some government job or watch the mass media networks. So yeah, once you give them a taste of truth and the means to figure out the truth through critical thinking and reasoning, then I don't think they can ever really go back.
Well, Chase, anything else you want to throw out before we wrap it up today?
Yeah, one last thing. Again, you guys can find us on brlp.org or blueridgelibertyproject.com. And if you want to see some work from me, I have a YouTube channel to where I talk about how certain services the state currently provides might be provided by the market. And you can find this at youtube.com/ancapchase. That's ancapchase. And I also do a podcast with Mike Martelli on more of the on more current events and more commentary. And you can find that at firstdegreeliberty.podomatic.com.
Well, Chase, thanks for coming on the show with me. I really appreciate it. I didn't give you any real notice or anything. We just kind of threw it together. And so I appreciate you doing that with very little notice. Oh, you got a tattoo today too, right?
I did. I did get a tattoo today.
Is it displayable or is it?
Oh, yeah, it's right here.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it says laissez-faire.
Oh, that's right. I saw the sketches, and it has the A, each of the A's.
Yeah, on the laissez part, it has the atheist A, and the fair part, it has the anarchist A. So it's pretty interesting.
I have avoided, I won't go into the whole story, but I've avoided tattoos when I was young and hanging out with bikers and everything.
Yeah.
And now that I'm old, it would be kind of goofy to get one now, except I've thought over and over about having a do not resuscitate tattoo right across the center of my chest. That's tempted me stronger than any other single thought of a tattoo. Well,
that's an interesting idea.
Anyway, I really do appreciate you coming on the show, Chase, and look forward to looking at your media and listening to your media and talking to you on Facebook as well.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ben. It was a great pleasure, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay, and that was the interview with Chase Rachels. I hope you enjoyed that. Now, I did have a couple of thoughts, and I want to point you toward two different web pages with two different articles, and they both apply to what Chase and I were talking about in very different ways. The first article that I want you to take a look at, and I'll provide a link in today's show notes, this is over at everythingvoluntary.com, and that's everything-voluntary.com. And the article is from Wednesday, April 24th of 2013, and the title is Accord, Living for the Present. Oops. Accord, Living for the Present and Recalibrating. And it's a really good article. It will, if you just take a moment and read it, it will, I believe, it will really make you stop and think for a second. I really enjoyed the article. And to give you kind of an idea, there's a whole section called Accord Rather Than Unity. And it talks about how important it is. You know, unity is important, but it's in a sense, it's more important that we're all of one accord, and it's less important that we have unity. And by that, and he and the author does a better job of explaining that than I do. But what he's really talking about, well, let me read this little section here. He says, but keeping agreements within workable bounds is important also. The channels of communication used to maintain accord are extremely sensitive to overload. If you have an accord between two, there are two channels. Among three participants, there are six channels, while among four, there are 12. So what he's talking about is every time you get more people involved, or every time you have more opportunities for communications to get spread among different individuals, then each time it multiplies out. So the simpler that your arrangements can be, the better. And ultimately, he goes on to say that in looking at voluntarism, you know, it all boils down to the zero aggression principle, or the non-aggression principle. And so the more simple you can make it, the better. And when we can see this in law, you know, as long as law is really clear and really simple, and everybody can agree on it and everybody can understand it, then it's extremely easy to obey the law. But the more convoluted the law gets, when you go from one law, you know, don't aggress, to four or five laws, then each layer that you add on to that multiplies the times and the ability, the opportunities to introduce confusion into the communication, and therefore you have the opportunities to break those laws. I'll provide the link to the article in today's show notes, and it's really worth sitting down and reading. The other article that I wanted to talk about is a topic that is really close to my heart, and it kind of bounces off of some of the stuff that Chase and I were talking about during our interview. And that is having to do with the Appalachian culture and the people of Appalachia and some of their methods and their ways. This is an article that appears over at ZeroGov.com. And ZeroGov is one of the locations that on the internet that I check on a regular basis. I watch for updates over there. That's, of course, Bill Buport's website. And he's the primary contributor over there. But this particular article that I'm looking at is called Popcorn Sutton, Whiskey Rebel, and it's by John Mayers. And if you're not familiar with the story of Popcorn Sutton, it's, well, for me, it's a real tearjerker. I mean, here's a guy who basically, he wasn't really political in any way, really, but the life he lived was very much outside of the mainstream, very much anarchical, very much, you know, writing his own ticket and just doing. He didn't harm anybody. It was not his goal ever to harm anybody. He just he was just trying to live his life, and yet he faced a lifetime of problems with authorities who constantly wanted to tell him what he could and couldn't do, what he could and couldn't do as he lived his life. And he was a moonshiner. He made his own whiskey and sold it, and sometimes gave it away. But for some reason, some odd reason that I've never been able to understand, people in the government and statists in general have this weird tendency to think that somehow they have the authority to tell you whether or not you can brew your own drink, whether or not you can distill your own drink, whether or not you can share it with friends, and whether you can make financial arrangements and provide it to other people. For some odd reason, and I really, other than just, you know, crazy puritanistic, that evil Puritan desire to manipulate and control other people. That's the only thing that I can see as a reason why people would want to tell someone that they couldn't brew a particular drink or they couldn't distill a particular drink and distribute it or share it with someone or sell it to someone. I can't see any logical reason other than just the purely evil thought patterns that the Puritan mind produces when a person thinks that they have the authority to tell somebody else what to do and how to do it. But this story of Popcorn Sutton, you know, he was a rebel in that sense, and John does a really good job in this article. It's a brief article. I mean, he really could have gone, you know, 4 or 5 times as big with this article, but he does a really good job of putting the entire story into this very small narrative, and he does a really good job of explaining what happened with Popcorn and how this man, this individual, lived his life and finished his life by his own choice and by his own desires and by walking the path that he chose for himself. So be sure and get over to badquaker.com to today's show notes and follow that link over to John's article on Popcorn Sutton over at ZeroGov. And also be sure and check out the Blue Ridge Liberty Project and what Chase and the other folks are doing over there in Asheville, North Carolina, and see if you have any interest in it. And, of course, as always, be sure and get over to badquaker.com. And on the right-hand side of the upper right-hand side, there's a button there for our forum. You can go in and look around on the forum. And thanks for listening to the podcast today. And remember to keep liberty as your mission, just like we keep it as our mission. Thanks a lot, folks. Bye.